Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Our starting line on Tuesday's show is African athletics. Ugandan star Joshua Cheptegei will be one of the favorites in Saturday's World Half Marathon Championships in Poland. The 24-year-old Cheptegei is making his debut at the half marathon distance, but he's been in sensational form in 2020. Joshua has won all four of his races and set three world records. Last week in Spain, Cheptegei set a new world record for 10,000 meters on the track, clocking 26 minutes and 11 seconds. Meanwhile, Joshua's younger Ugandan teammate, 19-year-old Jacob Kiplimo, is also expected to be a medal contender in Poland. The Kenyan Kibiwot Kandy comes into the World Half Marathon Championships as the fastest man in the field. Last month in the Czech Republic, Kibiwot had a world-leading time of 58 minutes and 38 seconds for a half marathon in Prague. Kandy is hoping to clinch Kenya's fourth consecutive men's title in Poland and follow in the footsteps of Jeffrey Kamwar. Kamwar is a three-time world half marathon champion, but he decided not to defend his title in Poland. Jeffrey is recovering from injuries sustained in June when he was hit by a motorcycle during a training run. In the women's elite race in Poland, two of the favorites are Ethiopia-born Sifan Hassan, who competes for the Netherlands, and Paris Jepchirchir of Kenya. The two women just had world records ratified by World Athletics. Hassan set a one-hour record for distance covered, while Jepchirchir set a women's-only half-marathon record of 1 hour, 5 minutes, and 34 seconds. Meanwhile, Ugandan sports officials are describing Joshua Cheptegei's recent world record as an Independence Day gift for the country. Cheptegei set his mark on October 7th, 2 days before Uganda's 58th Independence Day anniversary. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Magume Davis-Rakawinj tells us more from Kampala.
The Ugandan runner, Joshua Cheptegei, is the talk of town here in Kampala and the whole country after breaking the 10,000 meters record. Cheptegei broke Ethiopia's Kenenisa Bekele's mark after he finished in 26 minutes, 11 seconds. Ronald Sebuhinja watched Cheptegei's heroics live via YouTube channel.
When I saw him cross the line, I was extremely ecstatic. At some point, I was actually worried because the seconds seemed to be speeding by so fast, and I started thinking he probably would make it with just a second or so to spare. But when he smashed the record with, you know, that margin, it was extremely exciting.
Another fan, Peter Makumbi, shared the same feelings.
I thought the guy is the last, and I was like, this guy is not serious. He would be the first one on the run, and he's making himself the number five in the group. Then up to like 3,000, when one got out, then they remained three. They reached 5,000, another one got out, then they remained two. His pace lowered, and then his speed still reduced, but then up to when they said one lap remaining, and then I was like, yeah, this guy is really going to make it up.
Indeed, Cheptegei ran his fastest to break the world record, the excitement of his fans all over the world, including Shanti Husna, who's also watching from Kampala.
And I'm very, very proud of Joshua. I'm not only celebrating him as an East African or Ugandan, but as an African, because this shows so much and it tells so much about us Africans. Because I can imagine him doing this in this season and this period of pandemic whereby he's not been rehearsing, and I know everybody has been indoors for like a period of time. That means he didn't rehearse for so long, but then he managed to make us proud. He managed to pull this off.
Politician and sports reporter Sharon Adong agrees. She says the win will inspire other young athletes across Uganda and the entire African continent.
I'm very, very excited and very proud of his achievement. 2020 has been a very good year for him, and to the young people at that age of 24 years old, achieving 4 gold medals in a series of only 2 years is not quite something that an ordinary athlete has achieved it in Uganda.
Last year, Cheptegei won 10,000 meters race at the World Championship in Doha and has gone ahead to win numerous races, including the Monaco Diamond League this year. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni also applauded Cheptegei. He tweeted, "Congratulations, Cheptegei, for setting a new 10,000 meters world record in Valencia. Uganda is proud of you as you continue to hoist our flag high." End of quote. Dominique Otuchet is the president of Uganda Athletics Federation. He describes Cheptegei's triumph as a special gift.
It was indeed a race, very beautiful to behold, a race to remember for a lifetime. We were so excited, and the country is still in celebrations. This victory, this world record setting by Joshua Cheptegei is also indeed a beautiful independence gift to our country, because it only came 2 days before our 58th independence celebration.
I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
My name is Joshua Cheptegei of Uganda, a world champion, a double Commonwealth Games champion, a world cross country champion, a 3-time world record holder of the 5K, 10K, and 15K. My message to the athletes all over the world and other people is that keep a distance and follow the guidelines given to you by your governments and the health ministries, because the COVID-19 is really a serious disease.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Hi, my name is Daniel Igale, president of the Nigerian Wrestling Federation, world and Olympic champion. I want to say a big shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you.
Ghana's Olympic history dates back to 1952, when the country, then known by its colonial name of Gold Coast, sent 7 athletes to the Helsinki Games. 8 years later, at the Rome Olympics, Clement Quarte, an older brother of former welterweight world champion Ike Bazooka Quarte, made history as Ghana's first Olympic medalist. He won a silver medal in boxing in the men's light welterweight class in Rome. Since then, 2 more boxers, Eddie Blay and Prince Amarte, have won Olympic bronze medals for Ghana. And Ghana's under-23 football team won a bronze medal at the 1992 Barcelona Olympics. How has the COVID-19 pandemic changed the plans of the Ghana Olympic Committee for next year's Tokyo Games? That's the question Yao Afusu-Larbi posed to the committee's president, Ben Nunu-Mensah.
The COVID situation has kind of, you know, disturbed or unstable or, shifted a few things that would have wished we're doing. In terms of infrastructure development, I think that the minister will be the best person to. But from the little that I know, I think everything is on course. Papers have been presented to cabinet. We're looking at the possibility of putting up an Olympic-style stadium in Botiman, and that can be done within a year. Once all the papers have been signed, which I have seen a couple of drawings for the stadium, and then I know that the paper has been presented to cabinet. The only thing that maybe we haven't done, and that is also because of COVID, is maybe preparation by our athletes themselves, and that's where the challenge is. And it's nobody's fault. It's because of COVID. I would wish by now most of our athletes are taking part in international competitions. We have a full complement of qualified athletes, and we're taking them out to go and train, to go and come and really prepare them for the Olympics. But it's unfortunate. You can't blame anybody about what has happened. But I think that that notwithstanding, I know what other countries are doing, and we can also start. And fortunately for us, at least we've released participation in non-contact sports. So I can see some of our athletes training. At least I know the weightlifters are training on a daily basis. So I'm hoping that we can make up for the time loss immediately after December, when hopefully we'd have found a vaccine. We can start accelerating our preparation, and we can make up. Hopefully we can make up, but it's a learning process for us, and I'm sure that next year or before the next Olympic Games, we'll probably be doing things different and better than we've done for 2020.
What is the IOC's position to Ghana on opening up sports to ensure the safety of athletes?
I think that the president is on course. At least I'm also consulted on, you know, as and when or what we need to release. I'm also being guided. I believe that the president and the corporate team are being guided by what is happening globally. IOC has asked that we open up sports based on protocols that we are able to observe. The president has a responsibility to keep Ghanaians and Ghana very safe, you know, and that also would weigh in how he decides to open up. And you see, what is important is that we should all take steps and make sure that we are observing the little protocol that is required of us, so that we don't keep spreading the disease. That is the only way we can clean it out completely and then get back to our normal life. But now, if we're having challenges, now if we're not having our normal life, I don't think that we should blame anybody. We rather need to work and make sure that each and every one of us makes it a risk. As you're protecting yourself, you're protecting others. If we do that, I'm sure with the kind of drop that we're having in this country, maybe by December, we'll not have COVID problems here, and then we can all freely go out there and lead our normal lives.
What has the postponement of the Olympic Games done to the plans of Ghana? Has it been a blessing in disguise?
I'll speak from the IOC standpoint, from the organizers, and then talk about what GOC is doing. Well, IOC's position is that we need to have the games at all costs. We need to do everything and have the games come on. And I think that the other time I had a chat with Seiko Hashimoto, and she's also of the opinion that, look, no matter what, this games has to come on. I think it's a very positive mentality to approach the games. What is going to push all of us to do is to work out things and make sure that it is, at least by July 2021, it will be safe to host the games. And that is, when they say we have to do it at all costs, yes, it's kind of pushes everybody to make sure that we are ready for the game. And I like that approach. It's a good approach, and it's a good way to prepare ourselves mentally. The games, if it had come on in 2020, my brother would have said that it would have, Ghana wouldn't have shown the kind of things that we're capable of showing. So having it postponed for a year, it's a blessing in disguise for us, because then we have 12 months to correct the mistakes that we did, or to do things that we should have done before the games. And that is specifically, I'm referring to investing in the athletes. You see, most of the times, these athletes who do the so-called least finance sports don't virtually get anything, any support from anywhere. It's either their federations or they themselves. And of course, those who are on the IOC or GOC scholarship, they earn a little bit of money. But that is not enough. Okay? They hustle and struggle to go for competitions. Okay, they on their own, they've hustled to qualify for the Olympics. What are we doing for them as a nation? It is about time. We have 12 months. Let's invest in these athletes. What do we do to invest in them? Take them to as many competitions as possible. Send them to training camps. Send them to countries who have competitive advantages in the disciplines that they are taking. If it's our boxers, let's go and put them in Cuba. If it's our table tennis guys, let's go and put them in China. If it's our weightlifters, put them in Romania, put them in Russia, where weightlifting is good. That way, if we're able to get these athletes to go in on a training camp for, say, 6 months, okay, I am sure that with the kind of competition that they'll have before the games, when they go out there, yes, they would go really, really prepared and they would give out their best. Countries spend close to 4 months, or sorry, 4 years to prepare for the Olympics. We can't spend 12 months or we can't spend 4 months to prepare and expect that if we are serving a very fair God, I spend 4 years, you spend 4 months. And then God, being so fair, will say, you spend 4 months, you win the medals and go. I don't think that's the way it works.
How has funding been? Is the committee financially sound to help our athletes excel?
Yes, I think it started coming in about three, four days ago. So at least I had a few athletes who have called me to say, President, thank you very much. We've just gotten our allowance from the YA, and I'm very happy. At least it's a good beginning, and it looks like it's if it goes well, it would be good for Ghana sports. That's something that we've all been pushing for. You know, back in the days when Ghana sports did so well. We did so well because we had athletes who were working in government institutions, state institutions, with the security services, who did not have to worry about where their next meal is going to come from because they've been employed by the state just to train and go and compete for Ghana. So I think gradually with this YA thing, we're getting to that era where at least our national team at least have a way of earning some income from the state.
How many athletes have qualified and in what disciplines for the Olympic Games next year?
We have qualification from track and field. We have qualification from the para sports. We have just about five athletes who have qualified. But that is just about 53% of all the opportunities available to us. In fact, the Olympic Games has just 53% of the slots that have been filled. So what it means is that there's still about 47% slots that have still not been filled. And Ghana has an opportunity of qualifying more athletes, especially from judo, from swimming, from weightlifting. You know, just like we did in Rio. I am very, very confident. I can speak for weightlifting that at least we can get at least one weightlifter. He's almost qualified to join the team. Abeku for swimming is also doing very well. He can just slip through. And then we have some of our judo cats who are based outside, and they are doing extremely well. I'm just hoping that we can pull this through. And then from next year, or working towards the next Olympic Games, which is in Paris in 2024, we start approaching and doing things differently.
That's Ben Nunu Mensah, the president of the Ghana Olympic Committee. And he spoke with Yao Ofusu-Larbi in Accra.
Sport greetings, everyone. This is Falilat Ogukoya, Olympic silver and bronze medalist, African record holder, ranked the best quarter-miler in the world, 1998. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contracting COVID-19. Thanks.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. An update now on the Major League Baseball playoffs here in the United States. The Atlanta Braves and Tampa Bay Rays both scored victories on Monday. The Braves won the opening contest of the National League Championship Series, as we hear now from the AP's Mark Myers.
The Braves erupted for four runs in the top half of the ninth to beat the Dodgers 5-1. Manager Brian Snitker relished the victory.
I think it's important to get game one of a regular season series. And again, you know, on this stage right here with what we're doing, this is huge for us. It was a tough game, man. It was two really good ball clubs going at it.
Austin Riley led off the inning by drilling a go-ahead home run.
I have been struggling, you know, kind of rolling over. You know, my swing hadn't been fully there lately. So that one was really good, you know, especially, you know, high velocity with some run to it, you know, able to get inside of it and do damage is huge for me.
Ozzie Albies later capped the rally with his two-run shot off of Jake McGee. Atlanta starter Max Fried allowed a run over six innings with nine strikeouts.
Having fans in the ballpark and, you know, hearing screams or cheers after strikes and balls on both sides, and you definitely got my adrenaline up in those first couple innings. Felt like I was maybe just being a little too nitpicky around the zone. And as soon as, you know, I got in the third, just going to try to go attack them.
Will Smith got the win in relief. It's the Dodgers' first defeat of the playoffs. I'm Mark Myers.
Thanks, Mark. In the American League Championship Series, the Tampa Bay Rays now hold a 2-0 lead over the Houston Astros. The AP's Steve Carney reports.
Charlie Morton pitched 5 shutout innings, and Manuel Margot hit a 3-run homer as the Tampa Bay Rays defeated the Houston Astros 4-2. Margot's first inning blast off Astros starter Lance McCullers came after a Jose Altuve error extended the inning. Rays manager Kevin Cash on Margot's offensive explosion.
He has really turned it on with the home run. We didn't see many, you know, during the regular season, but I think he's gotten out 3 just huge home runs for us here in the postseason.
Mike Zunino added an insurance run with a solo shot off McCullers in the 7th. Morton scattered 5 hits and a walk to earn his second win of the postseason.
I didn't feel like I was battling myself the first couple innings, and then I did feel like I was battling myself. And then, I finished off, I think, that 5th inning. I finally got into a groove, but it's like, you know, running my pitch count up there, I can't convince Cash to let me go back out there, but you know, there's just some phenomenal plays behind me.
The win gives the Rays a 2-0 lead in the best of 7 American League Championship Series. I'm Steve Carney.
Thanks, Steve. The Sunny Side of Sports remembers Hall of Fame baseball player Joe Morgan, who died at the age of 77 at his home in California. Morgan was suffering from a nerve condition. He's regarded as one of the game's greatest second basemen. Morgan was a 2-time National League Most Valuable Player, a 10-time All-Star, and he won 5 Gold Glove Awards for his fielding excellence at second base. Joe Morgan was known as a dynamo at the plate, who was known for flapping his left elbow before he swung the bat. Nicknamed Little Joe, Morgan was one of the big engines on the Cincinnati Reds teams, nicknamed the Big Red Machine in the 1970s. His former Reds teammate, Johnny Bench, who's also in the Hall of Fame, said, and I quote, "Joe Morgan was quite simply the best baseball player I played against or saw." Joe Morgan, Johnny Bench, Tony Perez, and Pete Rose were the stars of a Reds team that won back-to-back World Series titles in 1975 and 1976. Pete Rose told the Associated Press, and I quote, "Joe would always amaze me. He was by far the most intelligent player I've ever been around. He rubbed off on all of us. A big part of the Big Red Machine." Joe Morgan's death marks the latest among Major League Baseball greats this year. Whitey Ford, Bob Gibson, Lou Brock, Tom Seaver, and Al Kaline have also died. And that wraps up the October 13th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Yeah.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation of the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.